Technical presentation, I'm afraid, focusing on the accuracy that I have been, or we have been able to obtain for a Q=4 Inspire lasting about 11 orbits. I hope I have a little time left at the end so that I can also advertise some work we did with Mike Keston and Emanuele Berti on superkick suppression, which is much more physical and much more exciting, I'm sure. Okay, I think I was supposed to make this joke, so these orbits go to 11. If you don't know this joke, watch out for a movie called Spinal Tap and enjoy. It's a great movie. Okay, so motivation, I think I can pretty much skip over this slide. Of course, we need accurate simulations. We need to know what is the accuracy that our codes can do to produce waveforms for Ninja, for data analysis, and God knows what else. So I would like to focus on one particular simulation, which as a matter of fact is the one I submitted to Ninja. So mass ratio is Q=4. The initial frequency, well, within one significant digit, it's 0.05. That's the frequency of the 2-2 mode, by the way. The grid setup, if you're interested, probably the more interesting things. Resolutions are ranged in the, from M over 180 to M over 240. And for the gauge, it's a standard moving puncture gauge, and the M eta, which is probably the most interesting parameter. M eta is 1.75. So we have done a very preliminary comparison with simulations that Doreen Müller and Bernd Brüttmann did with the BAM code, which is the black curve. The red curve is what I've got. This is not really a quantitative comparison, but at least in the ballpark we get roughly something similar. This is not even taken at the same extraction radius, not taken at the same resolution, so we do something more quantitative later on. Now let's move on to a convergence plot, and I think we should probably have a few more of those in the literature. So what am I showing here? As a function of time measured in units of m, I show the phase difference, delta phi, of the 2-2 mode for three different resolutions. The black curve is the difference between the phase that I get for a coarse resolution minus that what I get for medium resolution, and the red curve is what I get for medium resolution minus what I get for high resolution, amplified by a factor corresponding to some order of convergence. The blue curve is simply illustrates to you where in the Inspire I am. This is the amplitude of the 2-2 mode. It simply converts the numbers of time into something which is easier to interpret in the sense of the Inspire. So somewhere here you form a common horizon with the Inspire and so on. So the convergence order we get, or I get for this, actually is eighth order, which is a little surprising because I use sixth order stencils. So for some reason that I cannot explain to you, the leading order terms appear to have very small coefficients. In order to test whether this is clean convergence, we did a couple more simulations. So this is adding another higher resolution scenario, and again checking convergence. And again, the curves are very much on top of each other. This is very clean eighth order convergence. I also have a lower resolution run, which also fits into this eighth order pattern. Unfortunately, this goes unstable due to this eta instability that Eric Schnetter wrote a very nice article on GRQC a month or two ago. In a nutshell, we have five simulations with different resolutions, and they show very clean eighth order convergence. I should probably point out this is unusual for, at least in my experience, this is very, very difficult to get. Five simulations which have a completely consistent convergence order is actually very nice. And maybe I should tell you, this project started in 2008. So here I plot the phase difference relative, or from a reference simulation, from a reference result, which actually is the Richardson extrapolation result assuming eighth order. So the zero level corresponds to Richardson extrapolation with eighth order. This is the phase error in quotation marks of the low resolution run, of the not quite so low, medium, and high resolution run. The orange curve is the error in quotation marks that I get for the phase extrapolated with sixth order Richardson extrapolation, which gives you a rough estimate of the error. This is pretty much as much as you can do. And the phase errors of the order of 0.2 to 0.3, radiance, which is, in this case, by coincidence, similar to the result for the high resolution. Okay, we've done the same thing for the amplitude. Again, the reference level is given by the result for eighth order, which is an extrapolation. So you see the coarse one has a fairly large error. The red one is better. This is very nice convergence. And the amplitude error arising from discretization is actually fairly negligible compared to the error arising from the extraction radius. To summarize, the discretization error, about 0.2 radians, 0.5% in the amplitude. That's the relative phase error. And there's not too much variation. The errors get larger during the late ringdown stage and the early inspiral, especially for the amplitude. But this is simply because you're nearly dividing by zero because your amplitude gets very small. So for the extraction radius, we play pretty much the same game. I use the six values for the extraction radius, which are here. The reason I don't use the other two is because they're under-resolved. And therefore, they are pretty much worthless, at least in terms of interpreting the amplitude. And the assumption here is that I have a 1 over R fall off. Let me get the mouse out of the way. Or I allow for a second order term as well in the extrapolation. And the game is pretty much the same as before. The black curve is the smallest extraction radius, and as we move in, we gradually converge. And the reference here is the extrapolation towards infinity, assuming a 1 over R fall-off. And the orange curve is the deviation from that of the phase that I get if I also allow for a second order term. So it's, for most of the simulation, this is fairly small. It increases near the end towards something like 0.2 or 0.3 radians. For the amplitude, it's worse. Same game, but you see that at the smallest extraction radius, you have a relative amplitude error of something like 15% here, which gets better towards something closer to 10% for the large radius, which is about 100 m. The extrapolated value is a bit better, but still you're left with errors of the order of 5% early in the inspiral, which then gets better because your amplitude gets stronger towards the end of the simulation. So to summarize, phase errors 0.2, amplitude error ranges from 10 to 1%. Eccentricity, in order to measure the eccentricity, I follow the approach, or one of the approaches in the work by Abdul-Imre, Harald, Larry, and Saul Tucholsky, which takes the numerical relativity phase, subtracts a fit obtained by seventh order, and I use a time window from 350 to 1700 m. And this is what I get. It's at least somewhat the picture that you expect. It's a sinusoidal oscillation. The frequency at least makes sense. And it's gradually decreasing a little bit. The value we get is about 5 times 10 to the minus 3. And to be honest, this is the best I've got for any simulation so far in terms of eccentricity reduction. So finally, let's look at the PN hybridization. And this is probably the most important part of this talk. So I use the Taylor T1 approximant. If you want to see some details, this is very nicely described in this Boyle et al. Paper. The extension to unequal masses is based on Luc Blanchet's Livering Review article and Larry's article, where he gives the modes, and the 2-2 mode has even a higher PN order. So the PN parameters are fixed by maximizing the overlap of the 2-2 mode in this time window. But note that once you've maximized the overlap of the 2-2 mode, you fix the PN phase for good. And that means that the phase that you get, the phase off or phase constant, has to work for all other modes too. So let's see what we get. The red is the PN curve. The black is the numerical curve. This is the 2-2 mode. You see this is the window, 3 to 4 cycles maybe. And while that at least looks quite reasonable, you get fairly decent overlap. Then they go a bit out of phase. Maybe PN is not so good, but let's see. But this is what you get
for the 3-2 mode.
And this sucks.
Because there's a significant offset. And if you look at the PN equation, except for a very, very small complex part in the amplitude, 3-2 and 2-2 should be virtually in phase. And if you look at it, at the numerical result extracted here, 56m, they're not. Initially, I noticed a phase offset of about pi over 6, I think. And I thought, well, maybe something's magical there, but it isn't. You go to a larger radius and things get better. Again, the 2-2 mode, and now the 3-2 mode, the hybridization looks like this. It's a bit better. But obviously, this still looks poor. So what happens if we extrapolate the phase to infinity? This is what we get for the 2-2 mode, and you see suddenly the discrepancy between PN and the numerical mode, and the numerical result is significantly better. And also, very nicely, the 3-2 mode suddenly works. So with Carlos, we're trying to think of maybe some explanation why the 3-2 mode is so much more sensitive to the hybridization than, say, the 3-3 mode, because this problem does not exist for the 3-3 or the 4-4 mode. It does, however, exist for the 4-2 mode, which I will not show you. So to summarize, so we've studied a Q=4 binary. Discretization errors are in the range of 0.2 radians. The relative amplitude error is 0.5%. That's very small, but the error in the amplitude is much larger for the extraction radii I use here. The phase error is pretty much the same rough in the same ballpark due to discretization and extrapolation. Eccentricity is 5 × 10⁻³, and the hybridization clearly indicates that you need to extrapolate the phase to infinity. And this is something which appears to be significantly more important for higher order, for non-dominant multiples. Okay, and then let me spend 2 or 3 minutes on something completely different. Okay, yeah, I should probably not need those. So forget about everything else now. This is about superkicks. You've heard something about superkicks in various talks today, most recently by Josef. But actually, if you look at astrophysical observations, the astrophysicists will tell you that galaxies harbor black holes almost ubiquitously, at least as far as we know. Every galaxy we've observed probably has a black hole. So if they are superkicks, they should not have black holes, because the superkicks are larger than the escape velocities from any galaxy we know. So if black holes merge in superkick configurations, there should be no black holes in galaxies, or at least there should be a significant fraction of galaxies without a black hole. So here we have a clear discrepancy between numerical relativity results and astrophysical observations. So some explanations were forwarded by Bogdanovich et al., who said that there's a partial alignment of the spin of the massive black hole with the orbital angular momentum, and that to some extent suppresses superkicks. And with Emanuele and Mike, we actually followed up on that by performing PN evolutions from r equal 1000 m onwards towards close to where numerical relativity takes over. And what we have done is we monitor the spin configuration of the system caused by the PNN spiral, and then use existing fitting formulas for the resulting kicks. I have not much time to go into any details. This is based on Larry Kidder's work from 1995, supplemented with some additional terms. We use some stepper-dopper 5 thingy for the evolution. I have to skip this plot because you can't, well, it's a bit better up there, but I haven't got the time. But there are two effects resulting from the PNN spiral. If you have a spin of the massive black hole which is partially aligned with the orbital angular momentum, the two spins, the two individual spins of the black hole will actually align with each other. I would like to show that to you in a particular example. I hope this is not... Come on.
I know it's Windows, it's not very fast. And so in this animation, you see two individual spins, the red and the blue spin. The red is not one of the more massive black holes, and it points initially upwards because it's partially aligned with L. L initially points in the Z direction upwards. And then they orbit and orbit, go on orbiting. And what you will see is gradually the angle between them will shrink. By the way, you can't read that. This is strange. Give me. The radius is up there. It's the R. So now they started at in this simulation at a couple of hundred, 100 or 200. And as they go down, you may already have seen that the angle, they're gradually lining up with one another. And this appears to be a fairly generic phenomenon in spirals. And as they line up, of course, you move away from the super kick configuration. So this is a massive amplification of a super kick suppression that you have due to this effect from that Bogdanovich and also Dotti et al. Mentioned with the partial alignment of S1 with L. And I will, well, it's nearly there. And you see they're almost aligned now. Of course, I showed you the most extreme example I could find. But if we go back to the talk, if I can, this is this guy. I show you the histograms. They're not that easy to read because the lines are a little bit thin. Let's focus entirely on the middle section. And entirely on the purple plot. The purple plot has the initial spin of the massive black hole at an angle of 10 degrees with L, and the spin of the other of the smaller black hole is isotropically distributed. The solid curve, no, the dotted curve, which goes about this way, is a histogram. You see the kick magnitude here. Is what you get without a PN in spiral. That basically takes your isotropic distribution, that's the kick distribution. If you perform the in spiral and then apply the kick fitting formula at 10 m, you see that the large kicks above 1,000 are virtually gone, and you're almost exclusively left with small kicks. That's sort of the basic gist of that. I think I should stop because Emmanuel is going to beat me up otherwise. Thank you.
Question up there?
Both spins in the orbital plane and in opposite directions.
Yes.
So, what's the probability of actually having a binary like this out of, say, 1,000 binaries that we look at? One would think that it'd be really small, right? Yes.
Look at this kick distribution. This is the histogram we get, right? And you see that about a fraction, that's almost half of the kicks are above 1,000, which is enough to kick them out.
That's not including dark matter halos?
Dark matter halos have even smaller escape velocities. So if you apply this to larger redshifts, you should basically kick every black hole out.
Start talking.
Okay.
You're showing this on the 3-2 mode behavior?
Yep.
And how it gets better, or how this phasing resolves itself with extrapolated R.
Yes, okay. So that's what, because I was thinking it's the one that has the mode mixing, so... What's the amplitude? Do you know what the amplitude error convergence rate is with R for the 3-2 mode? I don't know if you showed that.
You mean the amplitude, the error of the in the amplitude of the 3-2 mode as a function of extraction
correct.
Radius?
Correct, yes.
It's about 10%. It's larger than that for the 2-2 mode.
You're showing before for the 2-2 mode. Yeah, I'd expect to be larger for the 2-2 mode, but for the 2-2 mode, you show that the worst things happen right at the beginning and at ring down. But
yeah.
Do you show the same kind of clumping of really bad error for the 3-2?
Yeah.
Or does it happen earlier?
I'm not sure I got your question, but you have the same increase in relative, a decrease in error.
I'm wondering if there's a mode, if it's possibly a mode mixing problem between 3-2 and 2-2 modes that shows differently near merger to the rest of the time and might resolve itself with large R.
You mean that the mode mixing might explain the defacing?
Yeah.
It is a possibility.
Gauge issues can also explain it.
Gauge, yeah. The funny thing is still that you that this appears to depend on L minus M. The larger L minus M, the worse this is. And this is something which is a bit beyond me at the moment. But yeah, these are all possible reasons.
Coming back to the more exciting part, let me mention for the sake of completeness two things. Is that the mechanism for aligning spins needs a mechanism that aligns the large spin with the orbital angular momentum before.
Correct.
Okay, so that... in case of wet mergers,
wet mergers is, I think,
this,
the most.
Although it's not so efficient for very high masses, but still you could have dry mergers. And the second thing is that in the equations of motions, the post-Newtonian equations of motions that you integrated, an important effect was not taken into account, which is the precession of the orbital plane. When you take into account this, there are other mechanisms that tend to slightly counter-align spins with orbital momentum.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Emanuele, but we do include the precession, right?
We just use a different set of equations, but the orbital plane is precessing. It doesn't show L here.
It doesn't show in the animation.
So I agree that we had to test this better, and we plan.
I think you're missing some higher order terms in
we do
in
miss
spins.
Yeah, we do.
And eventually one would like to evolve fully numerically that and see what the all the effects do. But obviously, we cannot do thousands of orbits. Not yet. Not today, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to mention I would leave this as still a little open.
I should probably mention in this context that our first simulation of this did not include the spin coupling and the higher order terms, which Etienne Racine pointed out to us. But actually, we find our results virtually independent of these terms. There's a lot of proof.
We should talk about this later.
Yeah.
We should move on, or we won't stay in schedule. Sorry. Thanks again.